We are Dukes and Bell. We start off every day and every hour by saying,
hey, man.
Tomorrow, we are down at State Farm Arena for the NBA draft. We currently hold picks 13 and 22, first-round picks for our Hawks. Do we keep them? Anse Sala, the general manager for our Hawks, had some things to say, and we're going to let you hear what he told the media in less than 30 minutes here on the show as we talk more about this draft and what else is going on around the NBA, because there's already a lot of movement. Celtics trade Drew Holiday to the Portland Trail Blazers. Whatever you thought the Celtics were going to look like, it's going to look completely different. No Tatum, as he's going to recover from an Achilles this year. And they're going to make other moves, including Porzingis, Mike, who apparently is out there to be had.
Yeah, and you and I were talking about it. Porzingis wouldn't be the worst guy we could pick up, you know, as far as, you know, kind of what you'd want in a dude that can score the basketball with Trey in a pick-and-roll situation. Also can pop out for the three. Not a great defender, though, right?
No. I mean, look, that's the deficiency, but the plus is he's a big who can get his own shot off the dribble. He shoots the three, and he spreads the floor for you. I mean, look, he helped Boston when he was healthy. And, you know, I think he's an attractive piece. The question is, expiring contract, and for teams that may feel like, Mike, they're one or two pieces away, he's going to be more attractive for them than maybe a team like the Hawks who say, all right, our young core, we really didn't have a whole season together. I mean, Jalen Johnson was hurt. You talk about all the things that transpired. We've got to find out what that's going to be. Do we want to make this deal on an expiring contract where he could walk for nothing? Either way, we'll get more into that coming up here at the bottom of the hour. Grant McCauley's on the way to talk about our Braves last night. Good win. But, guys, we don't have a closer. Dylan Lee finishes the game. He struck out Juan Soto to end the eighth inning, and I was like, whew. Then he comes back for the ninth, and at first you're like, okay, Snit, is this what you want to do? Mm-hmm. He retired all four that he faced for his second career save. Dylan Lee, I think, is going to get more opportunities. Meanwhile, Mike, Iglesias remains shaky, and that is a concern as we continue to try to win games and stack series wins against these Mets. By the way, we're 4-0 against the Mets. Tonight, it's Strider, more with Grant coming up. Mike, let me ask you something. What defines success in the second season for Raheem Morris?
Ooh, got to be a playoff appearance. Got to be a playoff appearance to me.
Not a winning record?
9-8, you don't go to the playoffs?
Not a winning record?
8-9, like a one-game turnaround? That's not enough for me. So I don't think it's enough for a lot of guys I sit with in Section 342. To me, it's this year's playoffs are bust for both the GM and I think the head coach. I think that I think if the coach doesn't get to the playoffs, I think Arthur would clean house
in his second season.
Yeah, because it's there. And if he doubles down on some of the problems we had last year, you know, like Jimmy Lake was not the right guy for the job. There were game management issues, which I still maintain the Commanders game was lost by coaching decision. So, I mean, all right, maybe I'm showing my own agenda. I wasn't a fan of the hire, but I do think they've got to go to the playoffs. I know if not playoffs, I think the GM is certainly gone.
I just think when we talk about success, and look, for the owner, Arthur Blank has never really come out and said, obviously the goal for every team is Super Bowl. That's a given. But he's not come out and said, hey, we got a winning record and our product is exciting. Follow me here. That Michael Penix shows you what he's capable of and has a really good season. And Drake London goes for over 1,000 yards, or maybe he leads the league in receiving. Maybe Bijan leads the league in rushing.
Well, what does it matter if we're not in the playoffs?
This is my point. You have all of these dynamic pieces, and the product is fun, but yet you don't get to the playoffs. Is that successful? I don't know if that's what Arthur Blank says. Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? From where we were, I'll take that. For us as fans, I don't know if that's going to be enough. But when say what defines a successful season, Mike, all of that could play out and we could be a game out, just like we were, out of the playoffs and finish, second in the division. We're out of the wild card, whatever it might be, and everything was really good.
But then that makes it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Would you stop counting?
8 years of no playoff football at Mercedes-Benz. Eight.
A long time.
Ocho.
It's a long time.
Tony Montana's. Remember our day today? Remember Tony Montana's? We haven't heard from him in 5 years. Cinco años. So 8 years, man. So, I mean, if I'm Arthur Blank, and if I was Arthur Blank and I was Arthur's age, I'd have a sense of urgency for this too. So 8 years without the playoffs, all those things could happen. We could be so dynamic and so exciting, but the general manager
didn't make it.
But in 4 years, and the general manager's 5 years then, the general manager hadn't put a winning, playoff appearing team. So
what do you guys think? 404-726-0929.
My patience is at an end.
Okay. I understand. I actually am tired of talking about a losing season. Right. We were 8-9 last year, second in the NFC South. That's Raheem Morris's first season, though. And going into his second season, what for you defines a successful season? Guys, we are weeks away from the start of training camp. And when we get there, I'm telling you right now, the expectation is going to be a lot higher than what many of you think. Mm-hmm. Because people around the league think this team is primed to do something. They really do. And whether or not you like the changes with the coaching staff or the players we've added, the perception around the league, I'm telling you right now, is that they gotta do something. So I'm not telling you Raheem doesn't have pressure on him, but that defining success is really, it's different than it may be for you or me or Mike. Like us, we're like playoffs or bust. It could be a really good season, right. And guess what? We don't get there. And does Arthur Blank blow it up?
We talked till we're blue in the face about how things went sideways with Kirk Cousins, and at some point, do you just have to, you know, pull rank? I mean, look, you are the coach. You have the rank and say, look, Kirk, I got to sit you, man. You know, and you waited too long. Like, I get it. It was never as easy as you and I tried to make it out to be in our conversations with Coach Raw every Wednesday up there at Flowery Branch. Yeah. And, you know, you got to move on. What about halftime at the Chargers? Because it was one possession game. Kirk was having a bad day, but I couldn't pull him.
He couldn't pull him.
It turned out to be four turnovers, four interceptions. So, but now, this season, Michael Penix Jr., the wide receiver core, article today at Falcons.com, you know, about, you know, having 2,000-yard receivers. We were very, very close to having that happen last year.
We were.
You know, certainly between Darnell Mooney and our man Drake London. But this goes back to, you know, the defense and how much and how quickly the improvement occurs, because the 2016 season was so similar. You had all these weapons on the offensive side. You know, look, Shanahan was a once-in-a-lifetime situation. He was great. I hope Zach is better. I think Zach needs to show some room for improvement, too, if I'm honest. But the play-action pass that we talked about with Mark Schlereth last week, you know, that should, you know, continue, run the football, commitment to the run. And, look, Pitts will be what Pitts will be. I'm not even going to debate that. But you got enough weapons without even counting Pitts in the mix.
What defines a successful second season for Raheem Morris in your mind?
Don't you think it's got to be a playoff appearance in your mind?
Look, for me,
I mean, it could be nine wins in a playoff. It could be a wild card.
Yes, for me. But a lot of things could look better than they've ever looked, and we still might not get there. We're acting like the NFC is not going to be a challenge.
No.
It's going to be a challenge.
And the schedule is a challenge, guys. You're playing. You got two playoff teams to start the season. Three of our first four opponents are playoff teams. Tampa Bay, Minnesota, and Washington, and Carolina humiliated you on your own stadium in overtime last year.
They did, and I feel like they're coming. I feel better about Carolina than I do New Orleans this season.
And look, for guys, I know most of you know the schedule, but just to give you the point, bye week comes early, which you and I hate. Buffalo, playoff team, Monday Night Football, at San Francisco, tough game. You know, taking on Miami and New England, Colts, Carolina, you know, Colts in Berlin, all that entails, going to Germany.
It does, and by the way, New England's going to be improved because they got a better coach. And I say that, and you're going, wait a minute, Belichick was great. Not at the end. Vrabel knows what he wants to do and the kind of people he wants to bring in. Mike, their defense is going to be improved. Let's see what Kevin thinks in Lawrenceville. Bill, I'm going to get to you as well. Kevin, what do you think? What defines a successful second season for Raheem Morris? Thank you for dialing us up.
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey. I know I get on y'all case a lot, especially Mike on Twitter, but I really do feel that you got to give Terry a little bit of leeway because – when he first came in, he came in with zero cap room, and he was going with a very aged Matt Ryan. So it hasn't been like 4 or 5 years of him building on one team. So you got to put a little bit of context behind what he's done for this team.
By the way, I'm going to let you finish your thought. Just want to say, yes, he did inherit a cap hell, and I've always given him a pass on year one. But you know what happened in year two? They made a play for Deshaun Watson, and they didn't have the money. And nobody wants to own that, my man. And then you lost Matt Ryan. And then we had two crappy quarterback seasons. To me, the general manager is part of that argument.
All right, so even with your argument there, Matt Ryan didn't do anything with the Colts when he left either way. So it's not like we got rid of Matt Ryan. We didn't get Deshaun Watson. Can't fault him for not having something that never actually happened. And he got rid of Julio Jones before he got, you know, old and broken as well. So I do like him making those moves that way. And then the year after that, there was zero quarterbacks in the draft. There was nothing but Ritter, I forget the other guy from the Steelers.
Yeah, Kenny Pickett.
And Purdy. Yeah, Kenny Pickett and Purdy. So there was zero quarterbacks. So now you're, again, in quarterback, you know, hell. So it took a while for us to even get to our quarterback.
So Kevin Cousins and Michael Penix. Real quick, so you're saying that you are giving Terry Fontenot, our general manager, more leeway than probably most Falcon fans because this is how you view this. That's what you're telling us.
Yeah, I'm giving a little bit more leeway, but this year has to be a year that we're taking a great, giant leap step forward. I think Michael Penix, Drake London, Bijan are up for the task, and our defense, I think it's going to come around. So, but I would give them, I believe we at least have to make the wild card for us to say, like, hey, we'll keep this coaching staff and office intact.
Okay. Appreciate you listening, man. Thank you. And yeah, look, you lay out a valid point, Mike. We say, at least on this show, that was a turning point. When we didn't ultimately get a quarterback that we thought was in play in Deshaun Watson. And again, revisionist history, guys. I know you're like, man, I'm glad we didn't get him. At the time, think about what was going on. It's not what ultimately happened with Cleveland and his, you know, being there in the contract. It was where we were and what we thought we needed. And yes, everybody's happy now that it didn't play out that way. But at the time, nobody knew that this was going to you know, happen.
And it's valid. You know, Matt, thinking about it, we had a pretty good run game for Matt Ryan up in Indianapolis. It was horrible. Matt didn't make it through the full season. But I don't care about what happened in Indianapolis. What is Matt Ryan going to do with the weapons they added in that draft in 22? You know, where there was really, once you made that play and you couldn't, you know, and then now Matt was cut off at the knees. They said Matt's an untenable situation. And they had to trade him for a third-round pick. All you had available was Jameis, Teddy Bridgewater, Mariota, Andy Dalton. It was junk. Nobody, you know? And that's why I think it drove further on down the road after the second year with Ritter was they thought they could maybe pump Ritter up. Couldn't happen.
No.
And now we decided we had to have two quarterbacks, which created its own situation. So, I mean, that's all at the end of the day, fair or unfair, as Truman's desk said, the buck stops here with the general manager.
Bill and Marietta, welcome into Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. What defines a successful second season for Raheem Morris for you? Bill, thank you.
Playoffs, yeah, but it's got to be a competitive playoff. Not like the Steelers that just get in and then get back out. I want to say something about Terry. Terry came in, yes, with cap hell, but he also, one problem they had was Arthur Smith. Arthur goes out with a team with, what was it, four tight ends and three, four running backs.
Yep.
That's not a balanced team. So Terry had to undo that. So now with Raheem, he has the team, and he and Raheem has put together a team that we all see has balance on the back end of the offense, the front end, the receivers, the backside of the defense. I mean, we see a team now. So I don't think Terry is on his last watch, and I don't think Raheem. This is Raheem's second, but we all can see a balanced team out there and a balanced threatening team.
See,
so
that's
I think if they get in the playoffs, they have to get in. And actually
do something and do something.
It's not out of somebody.
Yeah, they got to do something. But this is why this word successful second season, this phrase is so interesting, because we're not privy to what that means for our owner. To your point, if the owner says, "Man, I see how we're coming along. There is real progress. We have real star power here. Michael Penix has got people excited. This is way better than it was 3 years ago. Yeah, we're moving in the right direction. Right. I'm not firing anybody." I'm telling you, there's a chance that could happen, even if we don't go. All right, one other thing I want to mention. Appreciate you guys calling. Mike, our esteemed producer, said to me, Day-Day, Mike Smith went from 9-7 to 13 wins the second season. Dan Quinn came in. It was 8-8. We were 11-5, playoff team. Arthur Smith, 7-10, 7-10, 7-10. Raw, 8-9, question mark.
Yep, and as the caller brought up, the Arthur Smith, remember, this is the thing which next time we talk to Terry, we'll throw it out there. I know we're looking forward, not backwards, but, you know, because the coach gets hired a couple of days before the general manager, and we always heard about this, the phrase that drives Carl and I crazy.
Decisions.
And, you know, and how the decision-making process and, you know, working together and, okay, well, how does that work? I mean, if I heard that phrase, collaboration, collaborative effort. We heard it with Dan Quinn and Dimitroff. And when the picks weren't right, we're like, well, who picked that guy? So that's the thing. If you acquiesce to Arthur Smith, and he's the reason why we got Kyle Pitts, you know, it's a shame. You know, it's a darn shame. You know, I mean, the safe pick would have been Penei Sewell. And then and that's it. And it's not sexy, but you got bedrock, and you'll go get their other worker bees and the other positions later. But just to me, if there was a shortcoming, it's like, yeah, maybe allowing Arthur Smith to dictate how that draft went is a major mistake.
You are more than welcome to tweet at us, text us, find us on social media. Mike Bell, ATL. I'm at Put 'Em Up. See Dukes in this radio show, Dukes and Bell 929. Let us know what you think. We're coming back. Grant McCauley joins us next to talk about the Braves. Can we make it two in a row tonight? Braves, Mets tonight, game two of this four-game set. Grant McCauley, is Dylan Lee our new closer?
I think that's an interesting question, an interesting concept, and based on what he did last night, and if that was an audition, I think you certainly feel pretty comfortable about putting him in the highest leverage of spots right now, because what he did with Juan Soto and then coming back out to slam the door, that was his clutch of pitching performance as the Braves have gotten out of their bullpen all year.
Grant, I know we've talked about the hitting struggles, and last night left some guys on base, but hey, you're never going to apologize for a win, as Arthur Smith told us about the Falcons. But one of the things I know you've talked about it on the podcast and it's come up is the Michael Harris approach to hitting and never seemingly going deep in the count. And is that something that, I mean, it's almost kind of crazy when you look at how many first pitch swings, how many times he doesn't take it to a full count in his career. It's almost crazy.
It is. You know, what's interesting about that is, and I haven't talked to Michael specifically about his approach, but I did kind of ask him as he goes into the season further and further and further, like, do you feel that urgency? And he said, that's probably not the right word for it, but the weird thing about the game for him has always been when he's not feeling like his absolute best, a lot of times he gets his best results. When he feels his absolute best, it can be a struggle for him, which is a weird thing, and I don't know how you really solve that over the course of a long career, but I'm sure he'd like to find out. But yeah, I talked to Austin Riley a little bit around that same time, and the Braves had had a hitters meeting, and this was probably 3 to 4 weeks ago, and some of the information that was given to them in the hitters meeting was, hey guys, we're a little passive early in counts, especially against fastballs. Maybe that's one of the things that we can look to unlock. So if you notice the Braves, and this was a success or a hallmark of their success in 2023, was they didn't miss early count fastballs. They punished them, but they also worked counts, took their walks, and forced pitchers pitch counts up to make mistakes and get into bullpens early. So, you know, all of it fits together, and everybody's got their own set of adjustments to make. But for Michael Harris, I do feel like it has kind of gotten to that point where he is aggressive to a fault, to the point where it's really just doing him a disservice. And pitchers and the scouting reports are going to get around that, hey, we really don't have to deal this guy many strikes early in the count, or really anywhere in the count, unfortunately, if he's going to expand his zone this much.
What about Ozzie?
I mean, another great conundrum for the Braves. And, you know, I wish I had like some kind of answer, philosophical or otherwise, for what exactly it is that they're going to do that flips the switch, that turns things around. But his struggles are a bit different. He's walking more. His walk rate, I think, is up over the past at least month or 6 weeks. But his contact has just been a lot of pop-ups, a ton of pop-ups. He had some early home runs this year, and you kind of thought, all right, Ozzie looks like he's driving the ball again. That's good, considering he went through the wrist thing last year and had to come back and bat right-handed in the postseason. I feel like a lot of folks kind of forgot about that. But he had the whole winter to get over that, strengthen, and get himself back to what you thought would be a more representative season for Ozzie Albies, and it just has not been that. The power is not there. And I don't know if it's just a launch angle thing for him. He's never been a big bat speed guy. He's not going to be one of those, you know, when you look at that Baseball Savant page, that Statcast, and think, man, this guy's just hitting rockets everywhere. What's not working for him? Instead, you watch it and you see it's a lot of what I would say is middling contact for him. And it's like he's caught in an in-between setting where he wants to drive the ball, but he wants to make contact. And those two things, for whatever reason, are just not really cohesive right now. They're not really matching up.
Matt Olson's been on a really nice tear. Was it 24 games of reaching base?
Yeah.
10-game hitting streak. The other thing is, and last night, I mean, maybe overshadowed, was a bang-bang play where he makes a great grab, touches first, and makes a perfect throw to second for double.
Yeah, I've watched Matt Olson the last, what, 3-plus years now at first base. And one of the things I love when I go down to spring training is they do the full infield drills, and you can get about 15 or so feet away from him and watch Matt Olson take those ground balls and spin, like, what, 270, and he'll hit that second baseman right in the letters for the feed to first for the double play. It's just impressive. I mean, that guy has great instincts for whatever the play needs to be, and I feel like that's one of the things that when you get caught in a hitting slump, and maybe this is true of Michael Harris as well, you kind of forget about the little things he does to help the team win on a regular basis. But I feel like Matt Olson has done a lot of it this year. And first base, typically, you know, analytically speaking, is not a position that gets rewarded for great play. And Matt Olson, I think, is kind of breaking that trend this year. He has been that good.
We're talking with Grant McCauley, Braves Mets tonight, guys. What more can we say about Ronald Acuña? Wait, I'll tell you more. He has been unbelievable. And I think you said this, Grant. Is he the best outfielder in baseball right now? Okay, I'm willing to say he is. When you made your debut May 23rd and to have, what, 28 games under your belt and to be as efficient as he's been, I don't know if we've seen anybody do this, right? I mean, over a 28-game stretch, how good he's been. He's, what, the fourth best in Braves history in the first 28 games?
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the best months of his career, bar none. Like, we don't even need to put any disclaimers on it. This is peak Ronald Acuña Jr., 28 games, 13 multi-hit performances, a 500 on-base percentage. He is on pace for 37 home runs this year, and that is accounting for the 49 games that he missed. That's how good he's been. So if you want to make an argument that Ronald Acuña Jr. is the best outfielder in baseball, I'll back you on that because the list is basically Acuña and Aaron Judge right now. That's what it is. So best in the National League, best in the American League. That guy is also playing at a very high level this year. Obviously, offensively, he's a superstar. He's also playing some pretty good defense. The difference, though, is Judge is 33. Ronald's 27, so the prime of his career is still in front of him. So if you've got somebody who can really set up shop and maybe establish himself as the best outfielder in baseball for a while to come, Ronald Acuña Jr. is still that dude.
All right, it's obviously Strider tonight, and certainly a great outing last time with the Mets. They picked up Montes for the Mets. Is that who's going tonight? Frankie Montes?
Yeah, so he's been rehabbing and not looking particularly good either. So if you're a fan of social media and follow the Mets close enough to know who Frank Fleming is, Frank the Tank, he has been apoplectic for weeks that Montas was going to ruin their season. It's a harbinger of terrible things. So if you're not familiar with that, you're welcome, because if the Braves win again, you can watch that meltdown for about 30 seconds and feel better about everything going on in your life. But to get back to the game itself, Montas is coming back from an injury, whereas Strider, back-to-back great starts. I know that first one's against the Rockies, but his pinpoint control, the strikeouts, it just felt like the get-right start for Spencer Strider, and he carried it right on over to six innings of one-run ball with eight strikeouts against the Mets last time out. That's pretty much what you want to dial up this time around and hope that the offense can take advantage early, build a lead, hold on to that lead, and give it to the hands of what you hope will be some capable relievers to close the door behind Spencer Strider. And at the very least, you secure a series split of this four-gamer, which is no small thing.
All right, everybody in Hinesville, Georgia, and the country awaits Dickie Lovelady.
There he is. Former Braves great.
Yeah, what's this guy's history, man? The name is just, he's going with Dickie.
Well, no, Richard Lovelady is his name, and he decided upon being called up by the Mets, and you got to get a load of this guy's picture for this year. He has a very well-groomed mustache, and he's holding a half-eaten donut. He's in his Mets uniform, so it's fantastic. I got to find that and post that or retweet it or something. But in any event, I mean, he's a well-traveled reliever. A lot of clubs have kind of taken a flyer on him, including the Braves. But he was Richard Lovelady until being brought up with the Mets, and now henceforth, he is Dickie Lovelady, which does not sound like a real athlete's name. But we'll leave that there.
All right, Grant. Great stuff. Let's get another one. Keep building, and hopefully we can continue to figure some of this stuff out. I mean, every night it's like, yeah, great win, but I'd like to just, you know, I mean, it's baseball, right? It's hard to do this and be great every night, but you just got to find ways to get it done. Ronald Acuña's hot, y'all, and we'll see if he continues that streak tonight. Grant McCauley, thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
What's his name, Mike?
Richard? Dickie Lovelady.
Okay.
What does Dickie do?
I don't know. I got to see this picture Grant's talking about. 404-726-0929, guys. It's Dukes and Bell. We're coming back. We got to talk about what our general manager for the Atlanta Hawks said about this draft as we get ready for tomorrow night. And
do you believe him?
Trae Young.
Do you believe him?
It's a good question. Stay there. Ante Sala, what are you going to do tomorrow when it comes to our Hawks? Are we packaging these picks, 13 and 22? Mike and I are down at State Farm Arena, by the way, tomorrow to do the show. And I do want to remind you guys Big week for NASCAR. It's here, and if you're going to be camping out in the infield at Echo Park Speedway, make sure to hang out with the Morning Shift. They're going to be broadcasting live Friday morning and again Saturday afternoon right here on 92.9 The Game from the 92.9 The Game camper before the green flag drops at the Quaker State 400. Available at Walmart, so make sure you join us in the infield. And that's Friday and Saturday at Echo Park Speedway, guys, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Before we let you hear what Ansa Sala had to say yesterday in regards to Trey, and also Mike was talking about, are we going to use those trade exemptions and go into the luxury tax? He answered the question there. And he also was talking about the fact that he has a draft philosophy. But I do want to mention this because we got into a great college football conversation earlier in the show talking about EA Sports, the college football game, and it's in the game, and they ranked the toughest environments to play in.
Right.
Georgia came in fourth. But, Mike, a guy you absolutely love, Mel Kiper, has already come out and said Cade Klubnik is the number one quarterback for the 2026 NFL draft.
Okay.
2024 stats. Just want to put it out there. For everybody saying Clemson's going to have a down year and they're not going to get back. Cade Klubnik last year, 3,600 yards,
right,
36 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. 63% completion rate, and in 14 games, Mike, he also ran for almost 500 yards and 7 touchdowns. I think we kind of lost focus on Clemson at the start of the year after they got beat, and we were like, okay, Cade Klubnik played really well.
I mean, Georgia beat him 34-3, you know, and obviously didn't do anything in that game, had a pick. And then you look at, you know, what the games that they lost, you know, he wasn't a factor. No touchdown throws in the South Carolina loss. And then Texas certainly was obviously, that was a big disadvantage for him. I got to figure, if you're a Clemson fan, yeah, the numbers back it up, 36-6. Okay, this is it. It's go time. You know, because we've gone through this with Clemson fans going all the way back to Trevor Lawrence.
Yes.
Remember, we famously, Day-Day, our producer had a guy calling going, hey, man, I know you're excited about Trevor Lawrence. I know he's going to the NFL. DJ Uiagalelei is going to be the man. That's going to be the best quarterback. He's going to be better than Deshaun Watson.
Yes, he did.
We had this dude calling in from Anderson that day. We're like, no. But, yeah, look, Klubnik has certainly shown. I think at times the play calling, look, they should have beat Florida State 2 years ago. The play calling was abysmal. You know, so some of this stuff is beyond his control. And he's also got to make some better decisions at the line of scrimmage. But maybe this year he puts it all together.
Yeah, look, it's not too early. It's never too early to put this stuff out. But as we start approaching, you know, college football season and certainly camp for colleges, this is interesting because I don't know if a lot of people consider him to be the best quarterback in the country. But that's Mel Kiper talking about he's the number one prospect, at least right now, heading into the season.
I mean, that Georgia game. Three plays, six plays.
Shut him down.
Four plays, three plays.
Yeah.
Three and out. Another three and out. Man, that's brutal.
It was.
I mean, Georgia just swamped him.
But Clemson did get better, and they responded at the end of the season.
Right. And they made the play in Dabo.
That's right.
And he's slowly inched towards the portal and bringing guys in. And I think maybe whether that was he had to talk to the, you know, some boosters about that or the athletic director. Either way, Dabo softened his position. And I just thought, you know, he had a bit of a brain drain in the coaching staff that I just talked about. And I hope maybe they've righted that ship as well.
All right. Let's hear from our general manager for the Atlanta Hawks draft day tomorrow. First and foremost, here's what he said about Mike in regards to those trade exemptions and potentially going into the luxury tax.
We have a lot of optionality this summer. Like between the moves we made at the deadline, a little bit more optionality, flexibility with the trade exceptions that we got, long way to the tax, different things that we could do, but also have authority to go into the tax if we need to. So just looking forward to locking in, and then next season I think it's going to be a fun one.
Had a couple of guys hit us up on the text line saying, well, that's kind of low energy. Well, I mean, he's not going to tell you his game plan. And I just kind of felt, to a degree, it was refreshing to not hear a bunch of, like, you know.
BS?
Yeah. You know, all sorts of, like, buzzwords and, you know, all the stuff that now everybody in a Fortune 500 company seems to throw out in your, you know, in your emails. Yeah, I mean, he's just keeping it real. I mean, they said if it works. Now, I'll believe it when I see it, to see Tony Ressler get into some form of a luxury tax apron. I'd love to see them improve this team. I think everyone agrees. We talked to the real Bob Rathbun earlier today. You know, that, and Sweeney from SI was on yesterday. With all the injuries to the stars, the Eastern Conference is as wide open as it's ever been.
Yeah.
But can we go all in? Can we do what? It's almost a little bit like 21. It's right for the picking.
It is right for the picking. If we decide to make some major moves.
That was post COVID where some teams didn't go all in with their rosters.
Everybody was kind of afraid to see where things are going to go. It's Dukes and Bell, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Ansa Sala also talking about his philosophy heading into this draft.
When it comes to the draft, I always pick the best player available. Like, that's my philosophy. I don't believe in picking for a position. If there's a guy that makes sense for us, we're going to take him. And always the best player.
Okay.
Okay, you buying that?
No.
I mean, taking the best. All right. I mean, we need front court help. That's for sure. You know, I mean, are you cool with Bufkin, by the way, backing up Trey? Because there's some mock drafts where they got us taking a good point guard.
Yes. I like Kobe Bufkin. I hate that he got hurt because it hurt his development last year. And that's something that we desperately need, Mike. But Kayson Wallace's brother was a guy that played a lot here in the second half of the season for Kayson won the championship with OKC, but he's got a brother. And he played a lot. And, Mike, I liked his effort. I just don't know if he's going to be a guy that you look at as a potential backup for Trey. Either way, to answer your question, I don't believe that. I think they have a target or two that they're seriously looking at. And then even in certain categories, like, for example, if you just said, hey, they're going to go get a big. Okay, great. But that's not necessarily the best player available. That's a targeted attempt to go get a guy that fits in what you want to do.
Let me give some Hawks fans a heart attack when I tell you this kid's bio.
Okay.
18-year-old Jean Berenger from France, 6'11", 234. He's 18. He's got a 7-foot, 4.5-inch wingspan. As I said to Carl earlier, it's like a pterodactyl.
Yeah.
I mean, that's bigger than a hawk flying around, man. That's huge. Here's the rub, though. He's a soccer player. He only has been playing basketball for 3 years.
there's a learning curve there.
Kind of like, remember Jamal Anderson, the football, the defender?
Defender,
Not the running back, but the D lineman? Same thing. Late bloomer. That was like one of Rich McKay's last draft picks.
Yeah.
But anyway, just that's one of the names. Sporting News had us linked to him. It's spelled Joan, like Joan of Arc, but it's pronounced John. So, but you and I do agree, though. There are some big dudes from over in, you know, in Europe that might fit the bill.
I think you know, pardon the expression, but you look far and wide. And you kind of see, you know, there should be no stone unturned or all that stuff, Mike. But when they talk about taking the best player, I think it depends on what your target is. And I feel like you going into this draft, you know where you're lacking. And if you don't decide to draft that, then I think you're neglecting your draft needs. Forget about, you know, the best player. 404-726-0929. One other thing, and I think this is a big one, guys, and, you know, we've been talking about this today as well. We had on Bob Rathman talking about this, the voice of the Atlanta Hawks on the TV side. And he was saying, look, they got to figure out what they want to do with their vets, including the guys we traded for. And, you know, are you keeping Terrence Mann and George Niang, who's under contract, and some of these other pieces, Caris LeVert? But what about Trey? And are the Hawks truly locked in on Trey? And is he going to be here? And, you know, he's under contract, but at some point he's going to have a chance to opt out if you don't offer him that huge extension. Here's what Ante Salla, the general manager of the Hawks, said.
Yeah, we're locked in with Trey. And we talked last year, next season, we're just locked into next season, ready to move forward and be the best team that we could possibly be moving forward. And I think a lot of his leadership from last season went probably unnoticed to the common eye. Like, the way that he helped develop our young guys and make them better was significant. So, I mean, just continuing on with that and hopefully just making our team better.
Okay. And by the way, I mentioned Keaton Wallace is his brother. I want to make sure that's his brother who played for the Hawks this year.
A couple guys hit us up on the text line saying, hey, what about, you know, Derek Queen and certainly the big man from Duke, Kamen Malawach? They're going to be gone by most mock drafts. If we stay at 13. Yeah. Now, if we take 22 and 13 and move up, if that's along with maybe a player. But, yeah, I know Malawach is the guy I want, but it just doesn't seem like we can get him where he's going to be drafted.
Yeah, I think it's going to be – that's going to be hard. And not to say we won't get a good player at 13 if we stay there. My whole thing with this draft is and you know, we'll talk to some folks down there tomorrow. We're going to have some special guests that join us at State Farm is, Mike, you're going to draft – again, you just brought up the French guy. Two young players, what's the impact of them coming in and helping you immediately?
Or is it just a bunch of horse hockey and we're going to trade those picks?
Right,
you know, hockey. I mean, and the guys you see draft, they won't even be in a Hawks uniform, which happens all the time in
it
the draft.
It does. Yeah. Is it bullcorn? When you look at our roster and you look at what we currently have, if in fact you keep Terrence Mann and Caris LeVert, Mike, and you start talking about, okay, the bench looks looks good, right? Rishashe, Jalen comes back. Okongwu is right. out there.
You got Yang, you mentioned.
Yeah,
LeVert,
Dyson is, you know, we're talking about your starters. Okay, that's fine. How do you acquire more depth and get guys that can help this team immediately if you don't want to go trade for one of these prime free agents, or not free agents, but guys that are up to be potentially had? Listen, if you added Porzingis to this mix, it's a different team. Mm. Like, he adds something, an element coming off the bench that we just size.
Right.
He can spread the floor. There's stuff that he does that we don't have anybody that fits that, right? And George Niang is a streaky shooter. He was really good at times. He doesn't defend that well, right? There's a liability.
The minivan.
Yeah, and he's a great character. Like, right. He's fun to be around, but that's just what he is. So, and you mentioned Clint Capela. You start looking at this roster, you're going, okay, where can we upgrade?
Yeah, because that was one of the things, you know, Nance Jr., that's one of the things that, you know, we talked, Bob Rafflin brought that up. And if you combine that with maybe grabbing a big, see, that's the thing. If you're taking a big from Europe who's maybe played in one of those leagues, you know, over there, yeah, he's got some experience, like Rishashe did.
Yeah.
Do you want a college kid? I mean, you want a college big, like one of those kids, one of those dudes from Michigan? That, you know, one of those, you know, sort of stretch the floor guy, but maybe not a rim protector. I think we need a rim protector. Because, you know, anytime we get into, like, as you like to say, nut cutting time,
yeah.
Unfortunately for us, it hasn't been playoffs, but play in, we seem to have those athletic teams just run roughshod on us.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And by the way, to your point about, you know, a backup for Trey, do you want to go that route? Like, is that your most pressing need?
Like, I said, if you like Bufkin, you got your guy.
I think so. I don't think that you have to go there if you feel like Kobe can do the job.
I would go get like a Naz Reid or, but again, Miles Turner. Those guys might stay with their own present teams. Real quick.
If they become available.
As far as, if they have to play and how the team plays it. Any interest? I know this, maybe these two wouldn't coexist, not have oxygen in the room. What about Trey and Julius Randle? If Julius is, I'm just, they just made, you always make that face like I farted in church.
You're talking about getting him from the Wolves.
Julius has got a player option with Minnesota.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. All right.
I mean, that's, yeah, I know he's inconsistent at times, but that's a kind of like, when he wants to be ferocity we haven't had down low in time. I mean, him and Okongwu would be pretty interesting together.
No, it would be. Here's the thing, guys. The draft is one thing. I just want to separate these two, and we're going to talk more about this tomorrow. Chris is coming up with the night show. The draft is one element. Making a deal or a trade is going to be the other element that's going to either improve this team. We have a $25.3 million trade exemption to use. That is enough money to make something happen significantly. So it's not as if like, oh, we got a, you know, $3 million player exemption. We have a $25.3 million player exemption. And the general manager just said, hey, we're focused on trying to use that and do whatever it takes to make sure we get what we need to get. Mm. Those are different than what we're going to have. What's going to happen tomorrow night with the draft? So just understand, whatever we draft has nothing to do with this, Mike. Has nothing to do with whether they go out and use this exemption and how they use it to acquire maybe a couple of veteran players or a big time vet, depending on who that particular player is.
We'll be up there at State Farm, guys. We're going to have a lot of fun. Lauren Williams is going to join us from AJC, as Carl mentioned, and Pastor Troy, which will be fun to talk to.
Yeah. And who else? Tell us that, Day-Day?
Yeah, Nick Friedel is going to join us as well.
Yeah, Nick, good basketball guy. All right, man, lots to get to tomorrow. We hope that you tune in starting at 2. We'll be talking Braves as well and a bunch of other things. Hey, Dominator, man, we got to get out of here and clear our throat. Chris is on the way, guys. Stay right here. He's got a lot to talk about. Let's just hope the Braves keep winning. Look, I don't like some of the things that are going on. Mike mentioned it. Ozzie struggling. Monty Harris. But as long as they're winning, man. You know, that's all that matters. You just got to find a way to win series. This is a 4-game set, by the way. So you win tonight, you're halfway there. You could at least split, and then we come home for 3 with the Braves and the Phillies, which is also going to be a big series. All right, Mike Bell, we got to get out of here. Day-Day, great job. Executive producing. Clear your throat.
Man, LeBron James, man. Man for his time. Always in his feels. Oh. Always got to tell you that, you know, of course, I didn't have the advantage he had. In this case, he's even talking about a guy who hasn't played a minute in the NBA. Talking about Cooper Flagg. Saying Cooper going to a great place. I mean, he has the benefit, unlike myself. He gets to join a team that's established with Hall of Fame guys like Klay Thompson, Anthony Davis, Kyrie Irving. LeBron reminding you that he had to start in a woeful Cleveland. Just like he had to tell you a few weeks ago on a podcast. I don't know why everyone's obsessed with rings. It's not like the ring defines you as an athlete. granted, I chased rings by going to Miami and creating the big three. LeBron, well, your legacy stands on its own, man. You don't have to throw those little digs, those little footnotes in. Everyone knows you're the man. Relax.
When somebody tells you they don't need it, they're lying. When Aaron Rodgers said, I don't need football, then why come back? He turns 42 in December, and today he told his buddy Pat McAfee, this is going to be my last season. I don't believe you. Aaron, you've been saying that for 7 years with the Packers. I don't know if I'm coming back. Mm. Every year you said, I don't need to, but you did. Just own it. You love football. There's nothing wrong with that. And you feel like you can still play at a high level, so do it. But stop pulling our saying you're not going to continue to do this when every year you've done it. Hey, if you love the show,
you tell your friends.
You don't.
You find sitting on the visitor side of Sanford just too warm.